Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel this morning for this Wednesday, the 18th of June. It's a delight to have you with us. In this hour, we start off with an open discussion of issues, and it is our roundtable panel. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok.
Ooh, I'm so cold.
I know. It's we do it to keep the content fresh.
Ooh.
WAMC's Ray Graff is here.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Raymond.
Hi. I'm keeping it civil
today.
You're
not cold?
What?
You're not cold?
No, I feel great.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. And Legislative Director of NYPIRG, Blair Horner, is with us. Not the first time on the show, but I was not here the last time you were here, so it's great to have
and
you
the
to
react,
the mix.
And the Thank reaction you. To his appearance here, it was like he was a rock star.
Right. Not just from and his
well,
family, either.
Yeah. He is a rock star.
My family knows better.
Yeah, exactly. Look,
they
get
would
him
send
off
them.
The
That's
air.
Right. Send him home. He has to clean the toilet.
I want to, we have a lot to talk about, and of course, I want to get to the Benghazi capture and other issues, but I would like to start off, because we just came out of the news with it, Ray was mentioning this, and since we have these great New York minds in the studio, let me ask about it, about the Malcolm Smith mistrial. Very interesting story that is fascinating in the sense that Malcolm Smith, at times one of New York's most powerful political officials, as the majority leader and the minority leader of the state Senate, was granted a mistrial on Tuesday by a federal judge in his trial for bribery and wire fraud. The decision came after a week and a half of testimony that included reports of cash-stuffed envelopes delivered as bribes, boozy visits to strip clubs, and a scheme that team... Apparently, is that illegal? I didn't know.
No,
it's lunch hour.
But what's it all about, Alfie? It's about Yiddish. It's
That's
about
right.
Yiddish. This is what makes this whole thing so hysterical.
Meaning?
Well, you know, the big issue in this trial was that two of the people who were involved were talking to each other on the phone in Yiddish.
In Yiddish.
And the judge thought that the prosecutors may not have been quite right. She didn't say it was misconduct,
right,
but that they should have provided transcripts of the Yiddish. And there were hours and hours and hours of it, and they couldn't get it done. And the jurors wanted to go home. So Malcolm Smith, who has been taped and recorded doing these things, ends up being able to run again for his Senate seat because, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Alan, do you have any idea what Yiddish is for "that's a close call"? I mean, you know, Senator Smith escapes prosecution, runs for re-election now, it seems like. It shouldn't, in the primary and in the general.
Sure.
Because the failure of the FBI to have translated
70
Yiddish.
Hours of wiretaped and conversation in Yiddish.
And we are going out to
the Yiddish Book Center in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Yes, that's right. That's where we're going. And
maybe you can get Malcolm Smith to go with you.
Or the FBI.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the FBI said, the thing I didn't understand was the FBI said that they didn't believe that any of the conversations in Yiddish were really any substantive concern to the case, and yet one would presume that they therefore had translated it already, or they wouldn't know that. And so I was sort of mystified as to why they didn't have those documents to be made available. Exactly. It seems like a big mistake.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. Malcolm is no longer in the middle.
Well, he certainly, I don't know how many lives he has left, but he, you know, he's been skating on the edge of controversy for years, and in this particular case, just so the listeners know, I mean, this goes back to a real estate deal in Rockland County, where Smith was trying to work with developers, who unfortunately for him were wearing federal wiretaps, to engineer money from the state transportation money to a small road in Rockland County for developers. And the theory was, on Malcolm Smith's part, as we understand it, is that he was trying to get then money funneled back, this is a very complicated, back to Republican leaders in New York City so that they would allow him to run as a Republican for mayor.
Because he didn't want to run as a Democrat where he would have had no chance.
That's right.
So he thought this is the way to do it. And the allegation is that he bribed people.
Well, this is where the boozy strip club part of it comes in, which is the part that apparently has attracted Ray's attention.
Well, woke me up. But continue.
You can go now. Go back to nap and we'll wake you up in a second.
No, but it's a fascinating story. It's one of those, you know, Toto pulls back the curtain. We get to see Albany at its most ugly. And in this particular case, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, Smith argues that he wasn't personally benefiting from all this stuff. He was just trying to be like Francis Underwood in the House of Cards.
Right.
He was just trying to organize a deal that would allow him to run for mayor. But these other characters apparently were getting money, as they described it, under the table.
And as they were saying the most incriminating things to him, he would say, uh-huh.
That's right.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's right. I'm on the team. That's what he said. Whatever that means, right? It's very, very inscrutable, yet devastating.
So the defense request was granted. The judge said that the translating, transcribing, and analyzing the Yiddish and other recordings would stretch the trial into mid or late July, which clashed with child care and work obligations of at least four jurors. Since when did they start worrying about
the jury? Well, I think when they impanel the jury, they ask questions about, and the judge just says how long they expect the trial to go. So, in other words, if you came in to some major mafia trial, for example, that was going to go on for 7 months, you would know that theoretically going in. So these folks who said yes to their service and didn't raise any issues,
You can't keep them beyond what you say you're going to keep them.
Well, I mean, apparently that's what the judge, and she, right?
I think
she did poll them and ask who would have a problem.
Right, and one had like a legitimate personal family trip or something that was
I think four out of five.
They had concerns.
Yeah.
One had like a, I think that the Time story specifically talks about that they had to go on a family trip or something. So it appears that these people didn't just have complaints like, no, I don't want to.
Not, they said something. Not since the case, the mysterious case of Sheldon E. Silver has anything that has... I mean, it's not humorous that the guy's on trial, you know, for stealing. But not since the incredible case of Sheldon E. Silver have we seen.
Maybe we'll find out that there's another Malcolm Smith. I mean, there is a player on the Seattle Seahawks, actually,
Malcolm
Smith. And so maybe somehow he was involved in this and we don't know it.
Have a different guy causing all of this. And then I'm just wondering, I understand the analyzing part may take longer, but I wouldn't think that the transcribing part would take that long. The translating and the transcription.
They could have made a nice contract with our friends at, you know, at the book center.
The Yiddish Book Center.
Yeah. It is sort of weird that it's a six-month delay. I mean, it's not like, okay, well, we can get this done in a month, therefore we'd like you to stay for an extra month. But if you can't, we're not going to have the trial until January. I didn't quite understand that part of it either as to why it is. I guess maybe the judge has some time off or something.
So key into this is the fact that, as you alluded to and said this earlier, Blair, which is that he can run again. So we assume that it will be business. I apologize.
We can fight over it.
Yeah,
I think
that's
we both
right.
said it, actually.
Okay.
Well, it might have been Ray, actually,
who said it.
Not, I think, right.
You said
no,
second.
I've been dozing. Continue.
So, in other words, you know, you have to want, okay, so he goes, and what does it mean for his political career? Will this guy be reelected?
Well, I mean, there are examples of elected officials that are under indictment that run and win, and there are examples of those under indictment who run and lose, right? So, who knows? It depends on whether or not he has a horse against him. The primary is in the middle of September, the general's in November. The primary is probably where the action is on this because it's overwhelming Democratic enrollment advantage. Whether or not he has a serious opponent, and my guess is if he does, this would be used as a cudgel against him.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk about other issues in the news. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Yeah.
Support for WAMC comes from Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, and more. AdamsFarms.com. The Lake George Association, working to protect Lake George and its drinking water since 1885. LakeGeorgeAssociation.org. Jenkinstown Motors, New Paltz. offering foreign and domestic auto repair by Scott Cullen and a team of technicians specializing in Japanese models. JenkinstownMotors.com. And the Mack Hayden Theater, Chatham, New York, continuing their 46th season of professional musical theater with six more shows, including Fiddler on the Roof, June 19th through 29th. MackHaydenTheater.org for showtimes and tickets.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. American commandos operating under the cover of night seized the man suspected of leading the deadly attack on the United States mission in Benghazi, Libya. The government announced this on Tuesday, ending a manhunt that had dragged on for nearly 2 years and inflamed domestic and international politics. With drones hovering overhead, about two dozen Delta Force commandos and two or three FBI agents descended on the outskirts of Benghazi just after midnight local time on Monday, grabbed the suspect, stuffed him into a vehicle, and raced away, according to officials briefed on the operation. No shots were fired, and the suspect was spirited out of Libya to a United States Navy warship in the Mediterranean. To that statement of this dragging on for nearly 2 years and inflaming domestic and international politics, this is only going to fan the flames, right?
I mean, to me, it's sort of, well, we'll see what happens when the trial starts, right? It's supposed to not, he's not going to Guantanamo. He's going to be in a federal.
Right.
Which is already being criticized by the people who like to criticize the president.
I mean, the thing that's always amazing to me, I'm sorry, I just want to take a quick. I cannot believe that people do this for a living, that they actually fly in helicopters, drop down into very unsafe conditions, snatch people safely, and get them out. It's really like it's incredible professionalism. And the people that are whining and complaining about this, again, I don't know the politics of it that much, but I'd like to see them climb out of one of those helicopters and go down. Oh, we should have got them a few years ago. Yeah, good luck. Why don't you do it then? Why don't you go down and go catch them? I don't want to see any of these guys get hurt. So it's an amazing story to me. It's just an amazing story that they should be making a movie about probably in 2 years.
They will. I'm sure they will, yeah.
I was just going to say, but then that would make me second, that I can't wait for the movie.
That's all right. When we talk about it again in a minute, I'll give you full credit.
The jurisdictional thing, though, is interesting. So is the embassy technically our soil? In other words, it would seem that it would have to be on our soil for it to go into that jurisdiction rather than a military situation. So does that mean the embassy, in fact, is American soil?
I think the answer to that must be yes, right? I mean,
otherwise, it's a military court, right?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot going on here, including the fact that that the president would like to be out of Guantanamo.
That's right.
And doesn't want to start all of that all over again. And he's made that quite clear. So, you know, I have great respect for the fact that he wants to bring the guy to New York and to try him. But the problem, of course, is going to be how do you torture him then?
Well, you know, I mean, to Ray's point, though, I mean, I would assume that's the basis of the federal government's argument, because whoever represents this guy is going to argue that maybe your argument, Ray. We'll see what it turns out. But I mean, generally speaking, these embassies, I think, are considered the soil of the nation that runs it.
Okay.
And that's why local police are not allowed to run in there. And any of you have seen any of the various movies about this? When the guy runs into the embassy, he's protected from the local police. I think that's the theory behind it. It's fascinating. Obama, who pledged to close Guantanamo Bay and has not, that's true. Seems to be making the argument, and I think he, as the guy who didn't add anyone, and to add someone to Guantanamo, I think is one of the big issues for him.
I'd like just to make clear, because there'll be somebody out there who thinks that I really just meant we should torture the guy. Mm-hmm. No, but we have drawn very careful lines. I mean, when you take a guy and you put him in a seesaw and you put him under the water, we say, that's not torture. What is it again?
Enhanced interrogation.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, they'll use the best practices to try to get as much information out of this guy as they can, since we don't really know the details much of what happened. We know the congressional reports and stuff, but here's a guy who was directly involved, who at least led at least part of the assault on the embassy. He may have some real insights into what actually was going on in the streets outside of the embassy when this issue was triggered. If it really was triggered, for example, by the video, that would be sort of an interesting, you know, additional piece of information.
Which video?
There was a video.
The one they used as a pretext originally?
That's correct.
Everybody, including the administration, said, no, that's not the
reason.
That's
right. Well, I'm just saying, I have no idea, obviously, but if it turned out that was one of the motivating factors for this guy and his team, that would be sort of an interesting addition to history to know, and to also cast some doubt on the good idea of it is to run anti-Islamic videos in general.
And the question, of course, is to get, will we get the full story? The administration is calling this guy pretty much the ringleader of the operation. So we look at this as a situation. I started off by asking this question, but Alan, do you think that for the president, this was, I think the Times,
Times endorsed them.
Well, the Times said that this was a rare piece of good news for the president. And yet it has fanned the flames a bit on the Benghazi issue and started some more debate. So do you think that it will help?
It'll help.
When you capture...
It's going to help. Because, you know, there's a difference between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats are always blamed for anything that is not, you know, hard... pressed to get the guys, whether they deserve it or not. I mean, Harry Truman dropped an A-bomb. But you know, the Democrats traditionally have been blamed as weak on foreign affairs. So it's got to help them, period.
And if we get a fuller picture of what happened, sure, it may help Hillary Clinton if she chooses to run for president. Because it may, depending what happens, of course, we don't know. But if this capture closes the book on the issue, that obviously would help her.
And Julius writes, an interesting twist on the Benghazi suspect capture is that he has been claiming that the attack on the embassy was fueled by the anti-Islamic video.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so thank you for that. So,
I'm interested in the backstory. In other words, there are some unidentified officials say this plan to snatch this guy has been on the president's desk, more or less, for about a year. Others say that's not the case. Presumably, we would have had to have some at least tacit permission by whoever is in charge now in Libya to go in and grab this guy. And if we didn't have permission, that's an even juicier story. So we got to find out the nuts and bolts of how it happened and the timetable of how it happened to really get the story.
Although it's interesting is when the Delta Force went in and dispatched Osama bin Laden, the Pakistanis, at least supposedly, didn't know about it. So it's sort of an interesting thing. I mean, the American policy may well be that we're going to just snatch these guys whether or not anybody gives us the green light or not.
That's a vox pop waiting to happen right there.
You know, this analysis can happen on about three different levels. There's the Ray level, which he's just talking about. Let's find out exactly what happened.
The Ray level. Here, known as the Ray level.
Yeah. Let's find out what happened. It'll be an interesting legal precedent. Did it happen here? Did it happen there? You know, what is the legal foundation for this? Sure, that's great. Then there is the...
Sure.
Then
comes the shoe. It's dropping and go.
There's the Ray level, and then there's the right level.
Well, I think that's what we're getting at.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, I think...
Oh, look at the time.
Ray makes a lot of good points. No, I think that the other side of this is what we were just discussing, which is the president went out and he got this guy. Forget about all the other stuff. Because the other stuff doesn't really count to most of the people in this country. The president went out, he got the guy.
Okay, so the upshot is I'm irrelevant, and now it's time for the news.
No, you're what we've always known. You're esoteric. You're
All right, we only have
brilliant.
10 seconds.
Get me out of here.
We have 10 seconds.
Okay, there was a wonderful.
But okay, we'll get to it in just a second. We'll be right back after this break. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Just a quick tease, but we'll coming up at 10 o'clock today, we'll do the third part of our civility series. Mm. We are welcoming two scholars to the studio, and we will open up our phone lines, so be ready for that coming up at
We've been practicing
o'clock.
Our civility in the break.
That's sort of why I brought it up.
I'm moving between them, actually. Yeah. I have a striped shirt and a whistle. That's what I'm going to have.
It was an animated but very civil discussion, right?
Absolutely.
And
I'm sure it will be over the next 20 minutes.
Oh, boy.
I'm looking forward to it. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org, where we got letters like this.
Okay. Roundtablers, what kind of schlump is so meshuggah that he cannot find a Yiddish translator in New York City? I was in Brooklyn last weekend and could find at least 1,000 mensches that would do this. Oy vey. By the way, I am a goy, but I was born and raised in Brooklyn. Rocco. Okay.
Oh, boy.
That's pretty good. Okay. And here's from Erica. I was sorry to hear the discussion about the capture of the person supposedly behind the attack in our embassy in Benghazi, included a comment. I can't wait to see the movie. It's very sad that our culture emphasizes that was my fault. It was very I can't wait.
Maybe it was my fault.
No, I think we all said it, yeah.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, you didn't.
Joe didn't.
Yeah. It's very sad that our culture emphasizes to such a degree the entertainment value of political events and violent acts of clandestine nature, particularly of our making. There are lives at stake in all these situations, families and children, both the victims and perpetrators, and yet we Americans seem to take great pleasure in the inherent excitement and the thrill of nature of these events. When will we evolve as human beings to find greater pleasure, parenthesis, and entertainment value in acts of compassion and understand. That's from Erica. And then, let's see here. And let's see, I'm just scrolling down to see what else we have. Okay. Then Peter says, if Obama had traveled back in time and brought back the Roman centurions who crucified Christ, the Republicans would say, what took you so long? Yours, Bonnie. Okay. And then, yeah, and then that's, I believe, it. Joe, did you see anything else?
I think you got them all.
Okay.
Excellent. Thanks. We welcome your letters. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. During the 9:30 newscast from NPR, we heard about this, that Mary Barra, the chief executive officer of General Motors, is expected to tell a House panel today that the auto giant is determined to change its culture and prevent another safety crisis similar to its deadly delay in recalling millions of small cars with a defective switch. But Ms. Barra is likely to face skeptical questions from some lawmakers who plan to ask her about contradictions between the findings of GM's internal investigation and the Congressional Committee's inquiry, according to congressional staff members. As we heard in the NPR report just a few moments ago, she is ready to say that there was colossal ineptitude on the behalf of GM. But this is a story that certainly is not going away for General Motors.
No, colossal ineptitude that killed people. I mean,
right.
it's not just like somehow we ended up paying a little bit more money for our cars. In fact, in this case, it was corporate profits trumping people's lives, and they buried it when they knew about it, and the federal regulators didn't do anything aggressively about it, and as a result, people died. It's really one of the more disgraceful stories, I think, in American corporate history.
Well, you know, Ralph Nader got his start by calling out GM, I believe it was GM. And
unsafe at any speed?
Yeah. And
Corvair? What was that?
That was in the early 60s.
Yeah, and you would wonder how they, sitting around a room, placing yourself in that room, come up with the idea that they should hide it.
Well, they must think that they can get away with it.
Well, that's the truth. That's what every crook says. That's what every politician, when they're caught, you know, the 99,000th time, doing the same thing that everybody else got caught with, so that the only thing we can come up with is that they have been getting away with it and they think it's okay.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the fact that they think they can get away with it must be based on some historical evidence that they do. And in this case, if it wasn't for lawsuits bringing this information into the public domain, and probably the changeover in leadership that occurred after the crash in 2008, we may never have known what's going on.
There does seem to be, both in the Times article today and in several other news pieces, and certainly in what will be discussed today on Capitol Hill, that we now know the name of the engineer, a low-level guy by the name of Raymond DiGiorgio, who approved the switch's design and later modification. And it seems that the GM is really putting a target on his back and saying, okay, here's the guy.
Well, oh, sure. Throw him to the wolves.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that's what you do. You unload. You throw the low-level guy under the bus so that the chieftains don't have to handle any responsibility. I mean, that you know, the leadership of GM, many of whom were the leadership of GM when this was going down, they should face accountability. I mean, bravo to the Congress.
15 are gone. 15 employees already gone, right, including some high-level folks.
And that's the result of their internal investigation.
Right. And DiGiorgio says there were more people involved with this. So I think that's what these hearings are all about.
Should I be, if you did something really bad, should I be held responsible?
Yes.
As the head of the,
yes,
I thought you'd say that.
Well, I mean, if something bad where people died, I mean, it's not, this is not like an accounting error or even manipulating the financial markets where people lose their retirement, which, by the way, is terrible. In this case, people died and they ignored it, and the federal regulators were asleep at the switch. Excuse the pun.
Right.
We think they were asleep at the switch. Well, maybe they were awake at the switch.
Well, it appears that they were getting information. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration was getting information that this was a problem, and they didn't do anything about it. They just sort of rolled over.
Then the question becomes, why didn't they do anything?
And when will we have those hearings?
Well, the sooner the better. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that drives me crazy. The whole point of having regulators is to protect the public. And when they are asleep at the switch and the public gets killed, I think that we demand to... We're paying the tax dollars for these regulators to monitor what's going on, and they're not doing it.
All right, so let me ask you a question. In the grand scheme of things, which is a worse offense, a worse travesty? A company more concerned about its bottom line that it wouldn't fix a 75-cent switch, or a federal agency that didn't see it despite all the evidence that there was a problem? Who is worse in this situation?
Well, is there a premise behind the question?
No, I just want to know. I want to ask Blair.
Is this one of those two wrongs somehow?
No. I just want to ask Blair. Which is a bigger travesty against the public?
People getting killed. I think the families of the dead people probably think that GM is really the bad guy in this. But as a taxpayer, I think we should all care when our regulators are not doing their job. And this happens all the time. This goes back to Alan's comment earlier. The tobacco companies, the gun manufacturers. I mean, this is not an aberration in terms of the way corporations behave. That's why you have regulators. And when the regulators are captives of the industry, all you have left is a judicial system. And that's sort of crazy, because then you're bringing suit after you're hurt. The whole point of regulators is to make sure you don't get hurt in the first place.
You make a profound point about being captured. We see this all the time. That's why when a president has to appoint a labor commissioner, inevitably the unions are going to want to say in who that labor commissioner is going to be. And if it's the other party that controls it, not the Democrats, they're going to want to make sure that you get a guy or a woman who is favorable to their, corporate point of view. And this happens all the time.
Just to take a little detour on this, though, just because it's a particular bug of mine. I mean, Citizens United, of course, makes this all worse.
Sure.
Right.
Because Citizens United, the court case that allows unfettered money into the political process, means that the people with unfettered money, GM would be a good example of that, they made billions of dollars last year, are able to influence the political process, and it's the political process that appoints the regulators. And so you end up with the same sort of horrible situation. It's going to continue to play out and until these kinds of things get fixed.
Yeah, you're right.
And for those people that always hear about lawsuits being so bad, here's a good case where if it wasn't for legal action being brought by the families of these injured and dead people, we would never have known about this.
But again, the time frame. I mean, you're absolutely right. But again, the time frame. I mean, so we start seeing this in 2004, and yet 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, the same switches are still being put in the cars.
I know. It's reckless, dangerous, and outrageous.
And Michael Klein, who's a brilliant man, writes the following thing. Good morning. Thank you for addressing this. Yes, the GM folks are guilty and just as bad as the government agency that does nothing for years and years. And yet, and this is profound, and yet we lent the money to stay afloat. And now they are calling millions of cars. So in the end, we support a company that produces, there's a word I can't use on the radio.
Good.
And the Fed agency that is supposed to protect the public is doing nothing. And Congress, What will they do, and what will happen next? There you go.
Let me just mention one quick thing. In the buried in the deal that bailed out GM was some liability protections. And one of the reasons why GM is now creating a fund for the families of people that were injured and killed in these cases is because you can't bring the same kind of litigation that you can normally bring in a regular product liability case because the as part of the deal, the bailout, they got some legal protection. So it's sort of a buried in there. So they knew they were getting exposed, and I'm sure that language wasn't put in there by anyone other than GM.
But there is a fragility to the company. So can it, I mean, long-range survival when you're talking about this many recalls, the fines by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration of $35 million, the safety actions that are costing billions of dollars, not to mention the market right. impact.
Same argument made about the banks, right?
I mean, right.
It's the same
too
argument.
Too big to fail.
Exactly right. And so someone has to be held accountable. That's why the hearings are important. They should work their way right to the top like they should have done with the banks. And if some of these people at the top level did the wrong thing, they should go to jail. And that would send a message to all these other industries that no one, no corporate CEO wants to spend part of their life in the hoosegow.
Right.
Too big to fail. They're not going to let it happen. And if the worst comes to the worst, they'll sell it to the Japanese.
Or the Italians, yeah, like Chrysler.
Or the Germans.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will read some letters and get on to another topic or two. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Blair Horner on the panel this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. MPAC, providing the Capital Region with a full schedule of cultural events, including performances, screenings, talks, concerts, and more. MPAC.RPI.edu. File Hardware and Paint, Troy, New York, locally owned, offering hardware, paint, plumbing supplies, and more, walking distance from the Troy Farmers Market, PFEILHardware.com. And Poolit, Middletown, New York, above-ground pools, sales and installation, solar and gas heating, filters, chemicals, and more, in-store and online, pool-it-ny.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Aren't you having a ball, Blair?
This is great. This is great. Again, we.
This is how the sausage gets made.
For everyone who's listening, I think we've convinced Joe to write the book Roundtable Off the Record to actually talk about what happens when those breaks happen.
Yeah. Okay. Confidential. Yes.
You ready?
I'm ready. Okay. We have letters.
Okay.
Go.
Tom says regulation is frowned upon because it costs money and it hurts the job creators, in quotes. And let's face it, we need so much more, if for no other reason than we're a bigger nation population-wise.
It's true.
Whatever.
We do have more people.
Okay. And then Tony says, because the Privilege and Immunities Clause gives all humans the right to pursue his career, it is expressed by Bushrod Washington, George's nephew, in the case of Coryell versus Caulfield. Whatever.
Okay. Whatever. Is not, yeah, you said, thank you. You don't say whatever.
Thank
you.
FBI
thank you for
the
letter.
I have no idea.
Right.
Yeah. I am a big fan of Bushrod Washington, by the way. Always have been. And Martha Custis, who George married to get money. That's it.
That's the first time that ever happened.
And then there's a second, but we try not to read second.
Okay. How about from Howard?
From Howard. Oh. Howard. I don't have it.
Top of the list?
I'm sorry?
Top of the list?
Nope. They don't have it.
Okay. How can anyone blame the regulators? That's equivalent to blaming the police for crime. The regulators and the police are there to find what they can and enforce what when they can. But the blame belongs to the perpetrators. The fact that this keeps happening probably means that it's common behavior and very little of it gets found out.
Agreed. But if there was a murder wave in a city and it went on for 5 years... And the police did nothing about it. There would be hearings about why the police couldn't do anything about it.
And we found out that the police knew that it was happening in terms of the potential criminals that were involved, and they didn't do anything about it. I mean, in this particular case, what's been reported anyway, we'll know more of the hearings, is that GM knew it was a problem. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration was told it was a problem, and they didn't do anything.
And then Deborah. Large organizations are particularly vulnerable to bad decision-making. GM, BP, NASA, NASA are very public examples. There's never just one room where decisions are made. It's zillions of little decisions every day. Employees decide what to do or not to do, say or not say, in the next minute as set by the culture and processes. Leadership counts because leaders set the culture, set the limits of right and wrong, especially for people who don't have all the information they need. And in large organizations, nobody ever has enough of the right information. Great program, as always. Debbie.
Right. It's interesting, coming on the heels of the Veterans Administration scandal, right?
Yeah.
Where example where the management, let's assume for the moment that General Shinshenki didn't know about what was really going on, that there weren't procedures in place in a gigantic, sprawling bureaucracy, corporate bureaucracy in that case, where they didn't have some way of sort of tracking whether people gaming the system.
Whistleblowing or, you know, or...
In fact, they were firing the whistleblowers.
Right.
Which was a big problem.
Which is, of course, predictable.
Right.
We have just a few moments, and we will... I want to talk about Iraq for a moment. Obviously, continues to be a huge story unfolding. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is tightening his hold on power in response to the catastrophe unfolding in Iraq, even as his critics blame his policies for causing the mayhem that is tearing the country apart. Reinforced by a call to arms from the country's top Shiite cleric and by promises of support from Iran, Maliki has set about rallying the country's Shiite majority behind his leadership as Sunni extremists bear down on Baghdad. Negotiations on the formation of a new government have been suspended, and instead, Shiite factions who had sought to prevent Maliki from securing a third term in office by aligning with Sunni and Kurdish politicians have thrown their support behind him.
Yep, that's right. This is very tough, and of course, talk about lack of information. We don't know all the information. We do know that there's some, the lines are burning up between Washington, and Maliki. And he just figures, okay, this is how I got here, and I'm going to stay this way, and I'm not giving it up.
Well, he's apparently, according to the article, has seized on the tragedy unfolding in Iraq as a way to solidify his political power. And it's, when I was reading it over, it sort of struck me that's what Putin did, as you know, when he became when he was reelected. There was a lot of civil unrest about him becoming power. So what happens is these sort of manufactured external crises to rally everyone around the flag. Same kind of thing happening here, where Shias are being rallied around the Maliki flag to protect their portion. Really, what they're talking about is protecting their portion of Iraq from the Sunnis.
Would it even be possible to enter into some kind of coalition relationship with the Sunnis that guarantees everybody some freedom and some? But because I have a feeling that while it sounds good on paper, it's almost impossible.
Well, you have religious extremists,
fueling
this fire, and the tensions between the Sunnis and the Shia go way back.
It's
not going to be easy to work this one out.
Yes, and leading to the question
of... And it's a weird sort of situation where if we support Maliki, we're supporting Hezbollah, Assad, and Iran at the same time, because that's that team, right? It's sort of I can see why Washington really hasn't figured out what it wants to do yet, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, but in this case, the enemy of my enemy turns out to be my enemy.
It's my enemy's enemy.
Iran's the big winner. It will be the big winner in this. The power-wise, land-wise, they'll be the big winner.
If if they can bring things to their satisfaction. I'm not sure they can.
Right. I question whether there will be winners here.
They will. I suspect that their borders will expand, and their power is already expanding, and they'll be the, if there is a winner, they will be the winner in this.
If they shore up Maliki, they keep Assad in power, and Hezbollah is a winner in Lebanon, that's a pretty good day for the Iranians.
And as far as politically for the Obama administration, Alan?
Well, this is not good for the Obama administration. We saw Hillary recently saying she's not sure we should get in bed with the Iranians. That is predictable because she's going to run and she doesn't want the Obama legacy hanging around her neck. Makes sense.
All right. We want to welcome you to continue the conversation, keep the conversation going by going to roundtable@wamc.org. We would love to hear from you, roundtable@wamc.org.
Keep it civil.
Blair Horner, thank you very much for being with us. It's always very nice to have you here.
Thank you, and wonderful time.
We'll look forward to, if we were to invite you back, you'll come back.
If Ray and Alan are sitting next to each other, I wouldn't miss the show.
All right. Excellent. That's great. All right. With that in mind, Raymond, Alan, thank you very much.
All right,
we'll be back.